Support for this episode comes from Signature Bank.
Hey, this is Gary Head at Signature Bank of Arkansas. 20 years ago, we set out to build something different, a community bank that knows your name, values relationships, and gives our bankers the authority to serve you the way that you deserve. From our first location in Fayetteville to now serving families, farms, and businesses across Bentonville, Rogers, Springdale, Harrison, Brinkley, and Jonesboro, we've grown, but our mission remains the same. Local, personal, trusted. With 210 passionate teammates and growing, we're proud to serve all of our communities, including through Banco C, our bilingual banking services in Rogers and Springdale. Whether you're starting your own business, buying a home, or planning for the future, Signature Bank is here for you. Call us today at 479-684-3700 or visit us online at signature.bank. And be sure to tell us you heard about us right here on I Am Northwest Arkansas.
Searching for local businesses in Northwest Arkansas just got easier. From restaurants to roofers, boutiques to baristas, finditnwa.com connects you to the best local businesses with just one click. Discover something local, something great. Visit finditnwa.com today. Find it fast, find it local, finditnwa.com.
Welcome to the I Am Northwest Arkansas podcast, where we explore the stories shaping our region's vibrant culture. Today, we're joined by Chef Tyler Rogers, an Arkansas native whose culinary journey has taken him from a catfish shack in Magnolia to the kitchens of Michelin-starred restaurants and now back home as the executive chef at the restaurant at Stonebreaker. Chef Rogers brings a unique blend of global techniques and local flavors to the table, celebrating Arkansas's rich agricultural bounty. Stay tuned for Chef Rogers right after this.
It's time for another episode of I Am Northwest Arkansas, the podcast covering the intersection of business, culture, entrepreneurship, and life in general here in the Ozarks. Whether you are considering a move to this area or trying to learn more about the place you call home, we've got something special for you. Here's our host, Randy Wilburn.
Hey folks, Randy Wilburn here. Welcome to another episode of I Am Northwest Arkansas. I'm excited to be with you today, and I'm more excited that I'm here at the Stonebreaker here and on Markham Hill. And we are just a stone's throw from the university campus, but it feels like it's a world away. And I'm sitting here with Chef Tyler Rogers. And Chef Rogers was kind enough to sit down with me to tell us a little bit about him and about his background and about his culinary skill set. And so without further ado, Chef Rogers, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on, Randy. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So listen, I'd love for you to just kind of share a little bit of your background and how you got into, you know, being a chef and into the kitchen. I know it seems like every good chef has a story, you know, that moment when all of a sudden a light bulb went off and they just recognized their love for food, their love for cooking, their love for engaging with others and making them feel happy after a wonderful food experience. So I'd love for you maybe just to share with our audience a little bit about that for you.
Okay. Well, how far do you want me to go back?
You can go back. We don't have to go back to the womb, but really, when you think about it, like there's got to be that pivot, that seminal moment for you where it really just clicked.
Yeah. I mean, so when I really think about probably the moment that I decided I wanted to pursue this as a lifelong career, I was working as a cook in Little Rock. I had a four-ad scholarship to University of Arkansas Little Rock for arts, photography, and like mixed medias. And I dropped out shortly after the first semester because I just hated college. So I was working in restaurants. I was not going to move home. And a friend gave me the French Laundry cookbook. And it was my introduction to kind of food and art in the same realm. I had never really seen food presented in that way and elevated to that extent. And also just Thomas Keller's playfulness with his food, I think really resonated with me in a really strong way.
Yeah. I mean, it's not often that people are, I mean, when you you went right for the jugular. I mean, with French Laundry. I mean, you're talking about one of the great, one of the best restaurants in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of the hardest restaurants to get into. And that was your inspiration.
For
and
sure.
Lo and behold, one of the beautiful things, and we'll talk about it a little bit more as we get through your story, is that you actually had a chance to physically work there mm-hmm. at the French Laundry. So, okay, so you got the book and then you decided that this was the route that you wanted to take. You went through culinary training, and then what kind of, where did that road lead to?
So I went to probably, I would say it's the more non-traditional route now, but what I would call the traditional route of, you know, 100 years ago is I didn't go to culinary school. I had enrolled at Pulaski Tech in Little Rock. I did a semester there, but I'd already been in the industry for, I don't know, 7 years, probably at this point, working in restaurants. And I remember one day, the culinary instructor I had for Food One, we were outside and he was like, you know, you're kind of just, you're wasting your time here.
Yeah.
Because I had already had all the basics down. And he told me, he's like, you know, if you want to go to culinary school, you should go to one that's still a little more prestigious, which this is also pretty early on in Pulaski Tech's culinary history. So I'm sure that program has also developed a lot since then. But I did fly out to the CIA in Hyde Park, and I just could not afford to work there or to go to school there
yeah.
in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
So I just went the different route, and I decided I would just find the best chefs I could possibly work for. And so, yeah, in Little Rock, I worked. I was a kitchen manager at a restaurant called Vucare and the Afterthought, which was like a kind of New Orleans jazz bar situation. And that was a really fun experience for me. And then I worked for Peter Brave at Brave New Restaurant in Little Rock, which, I mean, it's been around for in 20 plus years. And Peter was a very good influence on me at an early age. That man, we had this private dining room in the back of the restaurant. And I mean, during the like spring, summer, fall months, he would be up at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, going to all the local farms, picking all the produce and fruits himself. And he would just, he'd get there in the morning and he'd have the whole private dining room just lined out with just trays of fresh produce that he picked.
Yeah.
And I'd never worked for someone who cared that much about what we were serving. And that was very impactful for me. And then
Did you join him on some of those early morning trips?
Nah, man, there's no way he was letting my young punk self come with him on his peaceful time. You know
yeah, yeah, I
mean?
I hear you.
I wish.
That gives a whole new meaning to farm to table.
Totally, totally. And that's the thing. I mean, he was doing it before it was even like really a thing in this
yeah.
area
yeah.
or in that area, you know? And from there, I worked at the Capitol Hotel, which is, you know, it's pretty famous in its own right in Little Rock. I was the sous chef at the Capitol Bar and Grill. And then I ended up working for Joel Antonez at 111 at the Capitol when he was there, which, you know, Joel was pretty old school friend. She had a, you know, Michelin star in the 90s in London. And he had also spent a lot of time in Japan and just across Asia. So a lot of French influence with like Asian flavor profiles, which I think did stick with me a lot. But I worked for him for, you know, 4 or 5 years until I just got to a point that I could not progress anymore there. I couldn't get promoted because he had sous chefs that were on visas in place. And I was like, well, you know, can I go somewhere else? He really wanted me to go work for Joel Robuchon. And I was just, it wasn't really what I wanted. And I'd been applying to the French Laundry for probably 3 or 4 years at this point, just sending my resume in.
Sure.
You know, and
yeah.
never heard a word back. And then he put in a reference for me and I finally heard back.
You heard back. Yeah. Sometimes it's that one well-placed call or
it
reference
is.
Or email that just opens up everything.
It really is, man.
I mean, so it sounds like to me, again, with, and I'm using air quotes now, that non-traditional approach, it can work for someone.
100%.
You know, I think I'm only saying that because I know that there's probably some young person listening to this that lives here in Northwest Arkansas with dreams of either, you know, starting their own restaurant or working in a kitchen of some world renowned or highly established place. And I think it's important, A, for people to dream
mm-hmm.
and to know that those dreams can become a reality. So it sounds like for you, that's kind of what happened, right? I mean, because it sounds like you worked really hard and it sounds like you gave yourself multiple opportunities to really embrace different styles of chefs mm-hmm. as well as just understand the business. From the business perspective, when did it all click for you?
I mean, honestly, I think it's still clicking a lot of the time, funny enough. To me, restaurants it's a very fluid industry and it's like a constantly evolving and changing industry. Even since the pandemic, I feel like culture has shifted a lot. I think it's shifted in a really positive direction
yeah.
in the past 3 years, past 3 or 4 years. For me, the love, like the love that clicked for this industry was probably honestly working for Peter Brave at Brave New Restaurant.
Yep.
Once again, it was just, it was the care and intentionality of how he served stuff and the commitment he had to the guest. To me, that was, I don't know, I just hold that in really high regard, and it's something I think I've definitely, I always try to translate into what we serve here too.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because as I think, and there's so, I mean, hospitality is a big industry.
Yes.
And, you know, you have, you can separate the wheat from the chaff pretty quickly in terms of capabilities, in terms of people just feeling welcoming or welcomed rather to a place. And I would imagine that for you, that's probably one of your biggest mandates that you have is that when people come here, they feel like they're home, not that they're invading somebody's space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, I mean, but how do you replicate that over and over again for each new guest that walks through these doors?
Once again, I mean, I think a lot of it is it's intentionality and it's coming with a hostility mindset that the reason I do this job, it's not because of the pay and it's not because of the hours. It's because I love serving people. I say this all the time, but food and giving people food is my love language. And I think treating your staff that way, showing your staff that, that's what we do here, it also, it bleeds out onto your staff. And, you know, one of the sous chefs in the French Laundry said something one time and it just stuck with me. It stuck with me to this day. But a lot of people talk about pushing your team, pushing them for greatness or to do good. And one time he said, you should pull from the front. And that it's just stuck with me. And you should be the example. You should be the leader. And you are what everyone's looking to make the right decisions.
Yeah.
I think that's how you can consistently give your guests a great experience and a welcoming experience.
Yeah. Have you read Unreasonable Hospitality?
Of course.
Yeah,
of course.
Everybody. I mean, that's like the book that everybody has to read.
It's on the shelf downstairs.
Okay. So that is a book. Will Guadara.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah, so, and he wrote an amazing book just about, you know, what it means to create an environment and create a hospitality. It's coming out of the restaurant space, but it actually has applications in so many different ways.
100%.
I think any business owner, any business leader, anybody leading a group of people, when you manage that way, and a lot of it is a servant leadership mindset of making sure that you're serving those that are around you, making them, creating an opportunity for them to operate at their highest level possible so that in turn will impact the people that they come in contact with, i.e. the public.
Yeah.
And that makes all the difference in the world.
It does. I think, like you just said, like having a servant's heart is probably the number one requirement to think for longevity in this industry.
Yeah.
Because if you come to this space for yourself, there's no way you're going to last.
Or just to make money.
There's no way you're going to last.
You know, I always, and I don't know about you. I mean, I'm a kind of a Food Network fanboy. So I like watch, I have my favorite chefs.
Who are they?
Alex Guarnaschelli.
Okay.
I certainly like, what's his name? Samuelson. From Marcus Samuelson from Red Rooster. And then I have quickly developed just a connection with a lot of local chefs.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping I'll hopefully add you to that list. But it's funny because each of the local chefs that I've had that I've actually really built relationship with, they all have a unique experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they have their why that has kind of, you know, pushed them to keep going. And each one that I've seen, and this is kind of the first time that I'm thinking about it as I'm having this conversation with you, they are playing what I would call, and what we talk about in business as being the infinite game. Like it's never ending, right? You're constantly on the quest to create the best opportunity, the best experience, the best, you know, meal, but it just never ends. Like you don't just one day, it's like, this is the best meal ever. And I'm never going to make another meal like this again. No, the goal is that you probably will, right? If you don't, then maybe you're missing out on something. But, you know, and I think about like Chef Matt Cooper, Chef Raphael, Chef Elliot Hunt at Atlas, Chef Jason Paul at Heirloom. I mean, these guys are amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all right here in Northwest Arkansas. And then, you know, to add you to that mix, I mean, we, you know, I always like to say this and people don't always get it, but we have an embarrassment of riches of highly talented, well-experienced, well-traveled chefs, yourself included, right? Because before I knew that you had done some time at French Laundry, I was like, you know, French Laundry has always been in the pantheon of restaurants. And I remember a buddy of mine, and this is a shout out to my friend Po Sun Chen. We've been friends for almost 30 years now, and I'm starting to feel old saying that. But, you know, I remember that was like the biggest get for him. And he took him like 7 years to get into the French Laundry. And it, for those of you that are the uninitiated that are listening to this, like, French Laundry, what are you talking about? Well, it's an amazing restaurant in Napa. Look it up. I'll put a link to it in the show notes. But I mean, the simple fact that you work there, but not just there. I mean, you've had a chance to touch and put your hands in places with many chefs that are well-regarded worldwide. And what was that like for you as you have continued to develop your craft?
I mean, it was definitely a life-changing experience, and is it exactly the experience I was looking for? I'll say that. I am a firm believer in like manifesting things that you want though, and like putting your mind to something and committing to it and making it happen. I think that goes back to just a little bit of a tangent off to the side, but when I was 21, I was diagnosed with psoriatic arthritis, and actually I had an opportunity. Like, I remember sitting with the rheumatologist after a year trying to figure out what was wrong with me. And he said that like I had the potential to be on disability and, you know, to take a little time to think about this. My mom said, you know, do you want this to define your personality for the rest of your life? And the answer is obviously no. So I had to work really hard to like get better and manage myself to a point that I could keep doing the things that I love to do.
Yeah.
And I feel like that just translated into my life further on of having a strong mindset, being able to push through the immediate negatives that are in your life and look at the broader picture. So it took me almost the same amount of time it took a friend to get a reservation there to actually get to work there.
Right.
But
right.
It was just an opportunity I talk about all the time. And I feel like I carried a lot of the standards and mentality of what it means to work in that environment throughout even other aspects of my life, you know, even just my home life or being a dad,
yeah.
You know, being a good leader and a mentor. Mentorship is just a thing Thomas preaches about a lot there. You're assigned one when you start. You have a mentor that has worked there before you and someone to like check in with and to kind of guide you through your experience there.
Do you still keep in touch with your mentor from the French Laundry?
I keep in touch, not with them. Well, actually, yes, I do keep in touch with them somewhat specifically, not as much as I did a few years ago, but I'm still good friends with a lot of the people that work there. And we still touch.
It almost seems like it's a fraternity of folks.
It kind of is, yeah. I would say. It's funny because, yeah, like even some of the people that I talk with now or that, you know, we keep in touch on social media and stuff like that. I mean, maybe I didn't cross their paths a ton working there, but yeah. Now, like we like each other's posts all the time. We comment or like even, you know, ask for recipes sometimes.
Sure.
And it's cool because, yeah, there's a laundry list of people waiting to work there. And so to actually, I guess, make it and spend time there and to thrive in the environment. Yeah, you definitely develop some camaraderie with the people around you.
I love it. I love it. That's a great example of what it means to kind of push yourself out of your comfort zone and into a place where you can really grow. Because mm-hmm. It sounds like even that short period of time that you were there, mm-hmm. that the level of growth that you experienced was probably off the charts.
Yeah, I mean, I always say this to my cooks, but like you don't grow in your comfort zone. You have to step outside of that to really like push yourself and develop into a greater version of yourself and really to test yourself. I think there's a lot to be said about pushing yourself to the limit and what can come out of that.
Yeah. Well, those are life lessons though. I mean, you have to, I'm constantly telling my kids that you've got to put yourself out of your comfort zone. You mm-hmm. have to push yourself and just say, hey, this doesn't feel good. Of course it doesn't feel good, but eventually you'll get used to it and you'll build up some calluses and build up the ability to withstand some of the pressure that comes as you continue to seek new opportunities and new heights.
Mm-hmm.
So it definitely works out that way. So listen, you know, working with like Thomas Keller and Grant, what was another lesson that you've carried from working in some of these Michelin-starred kitchens in terms of just that you've tried to apply on a regular basis that really kind of resonates and would translate into an experience that somebody would have if they came here to Stonebreaker?
It's all about details.
Okay.
Being detail-oriented. I mean, don't get me wrong. I definitely had other chefs bring that up in the past, but not to the extent of that you learn in those kind of environments. Because the other thing with that is, and this goes back to being able to work there, is that everyone there is there to do a good job.
Yeah.
I'll never forget one time there was someone who like there had been there, you know, cleaning out their cooler at the end of the day, and the sous chef was coming by checking their stuff, and there was like a couple crumbs in the bottom. He just looks at me and said, "Did you come to the French Laundry to do a good job?" And the guy was like, "Yeah, of course." He's like, "You didn't do a good job."
Yeah.
And man, that just resonates with you so hard.
Oh, yeah.
But everyone is committed to the details and that every little thing matters to the point of like, I'll never forget, we couldn't set sheet trays down on the counter without putting parchment or a towel underneath them first.
Yeah.
You know, that's something that no one ever thinks about, but the reason being is so we didn't scuff the countertops.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Which is something that doesn't even affect the guest, but it does affect your mentality throughout the day.
Yeah. You know, and that kind of thing does resonate with me, and I'm constantly, you know, reminding my sons that sometimes it's the things that people don't see are the things that you need to be focused on.
Man, sometimes they matter the most.
You know, and I always tell the famous story, of course, you've probably heard it about Steve Jobs and his dad when he was painting a fence. And his dad was like, you know, you need to paint the back of that fence well. And he was like, well, nobody's going to see it. And he was like, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
You know that it's there. Yep. And that early on, that what his father instilled in him, that attention to detail, was why he was so obsessed with how he created the Mac computers. And, you know, every detail mattered to the point where like, and most people will never do this, but if you were to open up your laptop and physically look at the way that everything is laid out, it looks like a piece of art.
Mm-hmm.
You'll never see it. But once you flip that laptop, that keyboard off, and you actually look at it, you'll never look at a computer the same way again.
Of course. Yeah.
You know, and so I tell people, and I always tell my kids this, I'm like, listen, no one may ever know, but you'll know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's important to always do your best, no matter what, whether people are going to see it or they're not going to see it, because it will certainly benefit you in the long run.
It's so funny you bring that up, because even just thinking about, I hate to say this, but like the difference if you tear apart a Mac versus tearing apart a PC, the way the internals are built,
it's completely different. Yes. Yeah. Now, I'm just putting this out here to any of our listeners. Don't go opening up your laptop and then calling me saying that you got your warranty voided or anything like that. Actually, you won't void your warranty, because I know I've done it before, but just be careful, because it's not for the faint of heart. But if you do, you'll understand what I'm saying when you open it up and you look and you're like, wow, I had no idea. Yeah, it is absolutely gorgeous. So listen, you got a chance to get out into the world. And, you know, sometimes they say, well, you got to set something free and it will ultimately come back. So now you came back to Arkansas. And what drew you back to Arkansas?
Family, honestly. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I originally left the French Laundry because my father had gotten kind of sick at the time. And I wanted to be close. It was just kind of like a scare for a little bit. And I just thought my mom could also use the help. So I moved back here. And then, well, he ended up getting better. That's why I moved to Chicago, et cetera. But then after I spent a few years in Chicago and kind of, I became a sous chef in a Michelin star restaurant, which was like, it was a goal of mine to do that.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Once again, back to manifestation, but like I did it.
Yeah.
I did it. And I was at a one-star place called Elizabeth that was maybe the most impactful restaurant on me for about 2 years. I loved working for Elena Reagan and the environment we had, but,
what kind of food was Elizabeth?
Man, crazy is what it was. And we changed the menu every 2 months.
Really?
Yeah. And we did a lot of like foraging ourselves. We would do weekend trips to Indiana or just around the Chicagoland area. Chef would do these competitions where I don't know how to word this. She would say whoever could forge the most like violas or Queen Anne's lace or violet on the way to work, she would give us a bag of gummies.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever got the most.
Yeah.
I always won that.
Okay.
I was determined once again. I would just walk to work.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I would just have a bag with me, and you're just, I don't know, in people's yards and in parks picking flowers.
That's hilarious. What is that guy doing there? So,
don't worry. A few of us did get like...
It'll be on the menu tonight.
Yes,
so.
Yes. But yeah, I wanted to be close to my family again. My parents were just, you know, they're not, I would say getting older. They're getting, mom, if you're listening, you're not old, but they were getting older.
Right,
and I don't know. I just felt a draw to be close to my family. And I think for me always, I always wanted to come back here and try to do something great in the state.
Sure.
Don't get me wrong. Like you've said, there are amazing chefs, especially in Northwest Arkansas. No offense, Little Rock, but I think we have a really burgeoning food scene here. I just always want to be a part of it. I do love the place I come from. I love the state. I love the farmers here. I have a great relationship with so many people here. And I don't know. I always wanted to be a part of it and bring something back. Hopefully learn a lot and contribute in some way.
Well, it sounds like it. I mean, you couldn't have picked a better place. When I look around you were kind enough to give me a kind of a tour of the Stonebreaker space here up here on Markham Hill. And for those of you that do know, this is the hill where Roots Festival had held a number of their concerts up here on the hill, and it used to be called
Pratt Place.
The Pratt Place. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so there's a little farm area. And I mean, I hadn't been up here since all this was built up, and it just, you don't recognize it until you see the barn. Mm-hmm. When you see the barn, you're like, oh yeah, that looks just like, yeah. And so they, everything's been super retrofitted. And so it looks, it really looks inviting. You've got a club space here. So it's similar to Blake Street up in Bentonville, but you have a version of that here. You've got the hotel itself. And then, of course, you've got the restaurant. There are just fabulous places to sit. Every place is inviting and just welcomes you. And it says, hey, come here and sit down and have a coffee or have a drink or just take in the view. There's just something about being over here that's just really, and we're like literally 8 minutes from the square in Fayetteville. Yeah. And so that's the beautiful part about it, is that you're kind of nestled in your own little pocket, but at the same time, you're still close to everything.
You should be here for the football games. You can hear the crowd.
You can hear the crowd. I can imagine. Yeah. I'm going to have to come down here. Well, trust me. And now that I've gotten a taste of what this is like and what you guys are doing here, I want to try to spend a little bit more time up here. And I would encourage anyone, especially if you're in Fayetteville, you need to come over here and just come hang out and tell them that Randy and the folks at I Am Northwest Arkansas sent you, but just kind of see what this is all about. But certainly more than anything, you need to come and try the food. And speaking of the food, what is your goal with the menu here at Stonebreaker in terms of what you're trying to offer? I know you have breakfast offerings, you've got kind of like a lunchish, brunchish type thing, and then you've got evening food. So what has been the goal with regard to the menu here?
So the ownership slash management company, they wanted to have, I mean, a breakfast slash lunch menu that we offer. We offer that from 7:30 to 1 p.m. every day. Mm-hmm. We have a bar menu that's available from 1 to 5, which is kind of, it's a small condensed snacks, but you can also get like a really great salad or a burger, which our burger is very popular. We use a local Wagyu that we grind in house. And I mean, it's honestly, it's very good. We also make our own American cheese, which is fun. We use a 1 year age cheddar and a Havarti that just make a really incredible creamy American cheese. And then, yeah, we offer dinner from 5 to 9. Hey, my goal is always to be a conduit between farmers and consumers.
Yeah.
I think that is a relationship that is missed a lot. That is, they both need each other, but they don't often cross paths. So that makes sense.
Right.
And once again, like I said, I have just such a great relationship with so many farmers in the area that I love highlighting their products and what they're growing and what they're excited about. When they get excited is when I get really excited. You know what I mean? But for me, just offering something unique to the area. A lot of my food is rooted in either something comforting or something you're familiar with.
Sure.
So, I mean, like something that's on the menu right now that we're, I mean, our menu is about to change, but something that's been on the menu, it's like a lamb and dumplings dish, and it's not what you think when you're getting it, but like the lamb is really braisy and the dumplings are cheesy and very satisfying, but the sauce it's all braised in is actually like, it's a jug, which is a traditional like Yemeni sauce but I'm using a lot of like warm spices in it that aren't necessarily traditional to it, but it's just something you wouldn't expect. So that's what I always like to do, is have something that you find comfort in, that you are familiar with or used to having, whether it's a texture or a flavor profile or a protein or vegetable, whatever it is, and then give you something you've never had before.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I'm assuming you have a standard mix of proteins in the evening for dinner, including some type of fish, maybe.
Yes.
Some type of fowl and obviously red meat.
Yeah, of course. So, I mean, right now we have, I mean, lamb, we have lamb. We've been using Hannah Family Farms out of Bentonville since we opened. I love those guys. I'm such a great relationship with them. The Wagyu I get from Sean Bansley of Harrison. He's a pork grower, but he has a relationship with the farm.
Bansley Berkshire, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Really, we use his pork too, but he has a relationship with a farm that's right over the Missouri line that does like a Missouri Wagyu that they raise there. And so he brings that to us. That's what we use for our New York strip that we offer right now, and as well as our burgers. We use the Wagyu that we grind here. The chicken we get from, not from across the creek right now, in the Spence, if you're listening, I miss you a lot. I know you've been busy. But we use it to another local farm for that one. The scallops we get flown in 3 times a week. That's going to change soon too, though. But yeah, a pretty standard mix of things. We try to make sure we have something for everyone. We have gluten-free options, vegan options. Those are actually some of my favorite things to do.
Yeah.
I can't remember. Someone,
what's your favorite vegan thing to make?
Pasta, probably.
Okay.
I developed like a gluten-free vegan pasta 2 years ago when I was a chef at Health Well Met in Johnson.
Yeah.
And it was, it honestly just, it worked really well. And rarely do you see like a vegan gluten-free stuffed pasta. So we were doing like a vegan gluten-free tortellini.
Oh my gosh.
Very fun.
That's like a trifecta because you're satisfying all those
hitting
urges,
all
right?
The marks,
yeah,
man.
You are hitting all the marks.
I don't know. I see this a lot. Oh, I had a guest come in Saturday night and they were vegan and had some other dietary restrictions. And like, don't get me wrong, I understand sometimes it can be, for some people, it can be like a little frustrating or a little taxing when you're in the middle of service. But man, for me, it's like, this is our chance to stretch and have a little fun now.
Yeah.
You know, if, why look at it as a challenge when it can be like an opportunity to do something outside the box?
And allows you to be more creative.
100%, man.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
I think it's so much fun. I love making vegan or gluten-free dishes or whatever dietary restriction that is just as satiating as the quote unquote regular version of the dish.
Sure.
You know?
Sure. I love that. I mean, that's exciting. You're making me hungry now. So speaking of Hail Fellow, you did spend a little bit of time there with working with John and the rest of the Onyx team. Mm-hmm. They are just an outstanding organization.
100%.
And, you know, it's so funny as I tell people, one of the reasons why I go to Onyx, even though Onyx ain't the cheapest coffee around, but I support them because of the way they support farmers.
Yes.
Right. Now, I was going to say local, but there are no local coffee farmers here. But the farmers that he works with around the world, like he knows on a first name basis, he treats them really well. And I've always told people that, you know, support Onyx if for no other reason, because they do right by not just their employees, but they do right by the people that keep them in business, which are the coffee growers.
Yep.
And I think, I mean, just, you know, I think we're learning today in this day and age, given where we are with, you know, the state of tariffs and all this other stuff, that we live in a very fragile ecosystem.
Yes.
And it's important for us to, you know, to support as often as we can what's happening around us. And so how many local farms would you say you're supporting here?
Oh my gosh.
Have you run a tally at all?
No. And it does ebb and flow depending on the season. But I mean, anywhere from, you know, 10 to 12 probably right now, currently.
Yeah. That's very cool.
And
you'd do more if you could.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say right now, you know, somewhere between 65-75% of everything we have in the restaurant is from a local source.
Yep.
And I would love for it to be 100%. You know, one day, obviously the seafood is challenging. At first, when I was designing this menu initially, I did have like nothing but local seafood on the menu. So it was going to be, you know, catfish also at the time, which I don't know how they're doing now, but there was, I think it's Laughing Something. There was a shrimp manufacturer that had like opened up in like the Rogers Bentonville area and they were doing like farm shrimp. And I was going to, you know, use that. I was trying to find all just freshwater things that I could source within 200 miles of the restaurant.
Yep.
That got shot down pretty quick. People wanted salmon and scallops and things like that.
It's hard.
You know,
it's
hard.
But well, we have a few. I mean, Blue gets amazing seafood up in the same source I have.
Yeah.
So, and that's cool. Because people are always saying to me, my friends that are on the coast, they laugh at me. They're like, dude, you're in Arkansas. You're not getting, but I'm like, trust me, we get some good food here.
Oh, we get it for sure.
So,
yes.
I mean, so it definitely works out. I certainly want to ask, what are your plans to open your own restaurant at some point in time?
Oh yeah. There's lots.
You have a daughter named Maggie?
I do.
You do. And it sounds like you have a vision for that.
I do. Well, I don't know. My vision changes so frequently, especially as I get older. I mean, yeah, for a while I had this concept in mind named Maggie's, which I still really like this concept. But I have honestly probably 4 or 5 things I do want to open. Mm-hmm. I really want to open a wood-fired bakery. I love baking, even though I'm not going to say I'm the best baker in the world. I'm pretty good. But combining like my love for like wood-fired cooking and baking, not many places do that. There's a bakery on the East Coast called Sub Rosa that is a completely wood-fired bakery. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love their model. And I would love to replicate that here. I also think it would just hit home really well in this area.
I think it would too.
I want to open a diner so bad.
Yeah.
I love Waffle House. That was like my dad's favorite restaurant.
People don't realize, people laugh about New Jersey, but New Jersey is kind of like the state of diners. And there were some amazing diners in New Jersey.
Really?
Just like really good. Like, oh man, you talk about just staple food. And
I'm so excited. My girlfriend's trying to get me to New Jersey.
Yeah, you got to go sometime and visit.
We'll have to get her to take me to all the good diners.
Yeah, Jersey's known. People don't realize that. That's why I laugh, because people are like, Jersey, what's in Jersey? All they think of is like Newark and the refineries and stuff. But I'm like, They don't call it the Garden State for anything. I mean, there's a reason why they do that. So I encourage people to take a closer look at the place where I grew up. So, okay, so you definitely, there is, in your heart, you have a desire to at some point in time open a restaurant.
Multiple.
Yeah, absolutely.
I also want to start a farm. I mean, honestly, right now, I've been looking for land for the past few months. I think I might start there, actually, and buying land first to start a farm before I get to the restaurant end.
Yeah.
And kind of doing it the reverse way I think most people look at it, but which would be like opening a restaurant and then finding the source for food after the fact. I'm kind of looking at maybe I can find the source for the food and then build the restaurant out around that.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. And I would imagine that whatever you do open will be firmly supported by local providers.
100%.
Yeah.
I mean, no, my goal is whatever I do open will be 100%. I mean, my goal would be 200 miles. Everything is 200 miles from the restaurant at max.
Well, you know, and I think in this day and age with everything we're dealing with right now, that model will actually, you know, allow you to, will give you some space and time to do something. So, you know,
yeah, I think because, so too.
And I think about what we grow here in Arkansas and around this surrounding area. It's a lot of opportunity to take advantage of.
I think some people look at that idea of like only sourcing from this amount of area is almost like you're being hamstrung by something. I think it's like an opportunity. Once again, don't look at it as something that's holding you back. Figure out a way to swim with it.
Yeah. Well, I think it's one of those challenges that either you're up for it or you're not, you know, and I would imagine that just given your experience and the places that you have hung your chef's hat, you're definitely up for any challenge that would present itself because it would give you a chance to really kind of stretch yourself out.
And keep growing.
Yeah. Keep growing. And with that said, before we end, I do want to ask, because we talked a little bit about it earlier, and I want to get back to that because I see some real value in a lot of your experiences. For the, you know, what advice would you give to a young chef in Arkansas looking to make their mark in the culinary world, or somebody that just is just working in a restaurant and, you know, has an idea that, you know, this might actually be the route that I want to take?
I mean, number one, just work your butt off. I mean, don't stop working. I'd say the first 10 years in the industry, just work, work as much as you can. Even if you're working for free doing stages at other restaurants, go do it. Which I welcome free stages at this restaurant. No, but really, I mean, I remember going to Husk in Nashville when Sean was still at Husk and just doing like a 3-day stage for free, but it's just like an opportunity to go learn something from someone else. And I've sent chefs that have worked for me to restaurants in California and, you know, Man Race and stuff to go stage and check out and just to learn as much as you can. Go read books, go buy books. It's like an invaluable resource that you never lose. And then
Reed
you get to
Will's
share
book.
Them. Read Will's book.
Unreasonable Hospitality.
Yes. So, that's a great one. Also Resetting the Table.
Yes.
That one is amazing. Yeah, that was like the original Unreasonable Hospitality.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go pick up Harold McGee on Food and Cooking. That is like the lifeblood, man. That book is amazing. Go read that book.
Yeah. Well, so for the uninitiated, explain what stage means.
Stage is usually like a trial interview. It's kind of become more commonplace that people actually get paid for it now. But back in the day, you'd go stage somewhere for, you know, a couple of days before you get hired. Just as like a working interview to see if you fit in well there. Can you, you know, handle the pressure? And also, is it a good fit for you? We do stages here, but we do like very abbreviated, like hour to 2 hour stages. And we just give people a couple prep tasks. We feed them. But it's so, hey, do you think you're going to be a good fit here? And does it feel good being here?
Yeah.
Because I hate for people to, you know, quit a job, sign up, come work here, and then a month later be like, well, maybe this isn't the right fit for me.
Yeah. And I think that's actually good advice in any career. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want to get into HVAC and plumbing, you should follow an HVAC or plumber around for a day.
Yeah.
If you want to get into carpentry, you should follow a carpenter around for a day. If you want to paint, if you want to do any of the trades, for sure. But then I think any business, if you want to get into sales or marketing, you know, shadow somebody for a day just to help, you know, just to see what's going on and decide whether that's something that you want.
Don't get yourself 4 years in debt.
No, listen, you know, and it's so funny. I heard a guy talk about this and he said, and this was kind of sad because he said he became a doctor. Mm-hmm. And had he just taken the time to shadow a doctor before he went through the number of years he went through to matriculate and get his degree, he would have never become a doctor. Oof. And that's, you know, that's hard. And he has since switched his career. He found his calling, but you don't have to go through that.
then the, you know, the years and amount of commitment.
I mean, yeah,
just to,
absolutely.
To be disappointed in,
yeah, you know? Either know or you don't know. And so I think sometimes it's just a quick trial run, and it's not a waste of time because, I mean, we're all students of life. Mm-hmm. And so you have to expose yourself to a lot of different things before you figure out what you actually like.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. I completely agree.
Yeah. So that's just encouragement, especially for young people, because I'm a dad of a 20, an 18-year-old and a 15-year-old. And I'm telling my sons all the time, you guys are still figuring life out.
Yes.
So go out and figure it out and try a lot of different things.
Try as much as you can. That's the thing. And just soak it all in.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm 34 and I feel like I'm pretty established in my career now, but like,
you've done a lot.
I'm still soaking it in.
I know.
Man.
You've done a lot though,
just
man.
Be a sponge.
I mean, golly, gee. I hate to see what you're doing by the time you're 50. You will have lived a couple of lives.
I want to be Francis Maumont. Do you know who that is?
No.
Look up Francis Maumont. I just want to live on my own private island, smoking cigars, drinking wine, and cooking over an open fire.
I love
that's
that.
That's the life I'm looking for by 50.
Okay. I like that. So, well, good. So you said earlier, you kind of shared the hours, but I would love for you just to kind of, when can people experience your cuisine? It's every day, right?
Yeah, we're open 7 days a week.
Okay.
7:30 to 1 for like our breakfast lunch menu. And I mean, the breakfast is served until 1 o'clock. So even if you like late breakfast, come on in.
Sure.
And then dinner from 5 to 9. We have an abbreviated bar menu from 1 to 5.
Okay.
It's every day. And then we do special events. You know, we do special dinners here, tasting dinners. We have a private dining room you can rent.
Yeah, I saw that. I would highly recommend people to come here and check out. The private dining room is so inviting.
Yes.
It's so comfortable. And you could get in there and have a good meeting and a good meal.
Yes. The screen in front porch. My favorite space is the front porch. It's just like, it feels so secluded from the rest of town.
Sure.
But I know, like you said, you're just down the hill.
And is the menu available for room service as well?
So we do like almost like a to-go service. So yes, you can order from your room.
Okay.
We'll pack it up to go for you and bring it over to you in a bag.
Yeah. Listen, folks, if you haven't been up here to Markham Hill and checked out Stonebreaker, you got to come up here, check it out. Just come up here, have a cup of coffee, have a drink after work one day. And there's just something about the vibe here that is so relaxing. So, mm-hmm. And if nothing else, if you want to come up and have a meal, you need to come up and see Chef Tyler. And tell them that the folks from I Am Northwest Arkansas sent you and you know, let us know what you think about it. So what's the website address?
Stonebreakerhotel.com.
Okay. Stonebreakerhotel.com. We'll put everything in the show notes for this episode. We'll even put some contact information for how you can connect with or follow Chef Tyler online. And I mean, that's it. But Chef, we really appreciate you taking time out of your schedule. And now I can check off that I've had another amazing chef on the I Am Northwest Arkansas podcast.
Thanks so much for coming.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
So the goal will be is to probably have you on more than once, because every really good chef that I've had on more than once. So
you skip most of the good stories, honestly.
Yeah. Well, no, it's all good. So we'll be able to, we want to save something for the next time. But anyway, we really appreciate you and all the work that you're doing here. Welcome back to Arkansas. We're glad you're here. And we want to kind of continue to support you in everything that you put your hand to. So wish you nothing but continued success.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, there you have it, folks. Another episode of the I Am Northwest Arkansas podcast. To learn more about us, you can visit us on our website at iamnorthwestarkansas.com. Remember, our podcast can be found on every major podcasting platform, including YouTube. Our podcast comes out rain or shine every Monday, and you can hear a brand new episode. And sometimes we put out bonus episodes. So I would encourage you to check us out. You can sign up for our newsletter and just learn all about the things that make Northwest Arkansas such a special place to live. Remember, we cover the intersection of business, culture, entrepreneurship, and life right here in the Ozarks. I'm Randy Wilburn, your host, and we'll see you next week with another new episode of the I Am Northwest Arkansas podcast. Peace.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of I Am Northwest Arkansas. Check us out each and every week, available anywhere that great podcasts can be found. For show notes or more information on becoming a guest, visit iamnorthwestarkansas.com. We'll see you next week on I Am Northwest Arkansas.
Attention Northwest Arkansas businesses and talent seekers. Introducing OnboardNWA.com, your hyperlocal job board crafted for our unique community. Struggling to find the perfect match for your job openings? Onboard NWA simplifies the hiring process, connecting you with the region's top talent through tailored talent matching solutions. Whether you're an employer seeking expertise or a professional looking for your next opportunity, Onboard NWA is here for you. Discover more at onboardnwa.com and let's build the future of Northwest Arkansas together.